Welcome to the stream. I'm Ahmed Shahabuddin. Protests are intensifying in Peru, and the president is under pressure to resign amid widespread anger over the killing of dozens of people protesting the removal of her predecessor. As Dina Boluarte rejects calls to step down, the crisis is highlighting Peru's entrenched social and economic inequalities. Today, we look at the divide and ask how it can be bridged. Joining us for today's conversation, Al Jazeera correspondent Mariana Sanchez joins us from Lima. Renzo Aroni, a historian and anthropologist focusing on Peru and the wider Latin American region, joins us from New York. And also in New York, Eduardo Gonzalez Cueva, a human rights consultant and sociologist. Welcome, everybody. Of course, you can join the conversation as well. Send us your comments and questions for our panel, and we'll put it straight to them. Mariana, I want to ask you with the latest. I mean, you know, we've looked at this story now for a few weeks as it's developed, looking back to December when things sort of were all sparked off. I mean, what really triggered this in your mind? What's important to know?
Well, I think this was triggered by the ousting of former President Pedro Castillo, who was going to be impeached that day, but who decided to perpetrate a coup d'etat against his own government by ordering the army to take the army and the police to take over the control of the streets and also the judiciary, especially the arrest of the prosecutor who was investigating him for on corruption, allegations of corruption. Mm-hmm. But I think deep down, what happened is that when he was elected in April of the year before, 80%, I would say, of people in the south of the country voted for him. And he had promised a lot of things during this time. He promised, after he came to office and invited mayors and prefects to the presidential palace, offered them irrigation projects, agrarian reform, mm-hmm. a reform of the constitution, and so on. And so they went back to their communities with all these promises after Castillo was the president. So I think that what happened is that once Castillo left the presidency, people saw all these promises fading away, and they decided they did not want to give up to them. Mm-hmm. So many people I've been talking to, not only in the protests here in Lima, but in the highlands of the country where a lot of people live in very poor conditions, is that they say, well, it's not really about Castillo anymore. It's about the promises he mm-hmm. made to us. And since we voted for him, we want those promises delivered.
And that's why they're
protesting.
And Mariana, as you said that sentence, I mean, both of our other guests nodded. And I want to come to you, Renzo. I mean, it seems like people feel betrayed, not necessarily by him, but by this system. They feel underrepresented or not represented at all. What can you share with us from sort of the rural, southern, indigenous perspective, the people who have been the most marginalized for decades now? What do they want? What's their demand?
Yeah, thank you for the questions. Yes, as Mariana says about this very critical moment after Castillo was ousted in December 2022. So her vice president, Dina Boluarte, became the country's first female president, but she betrayed the Castillo supporters aligned with the right-wing Congress and the military. And protests evidently emerged in the southern Peruvian Andes, the region that massively voted for Castillo during the 2021 elections. And what seems at the beginning of the protests are demonstrations for defending Castillo and his release from prison turned into a broader political platform that Castillo promised, including social structural transformation of the country, especially for those people who historically were marginalized, indigenous, rural, poor people from the Andes, from the Amazon, marginalized popular sectors in urban centers, who are hungry, you know, to see some social change, especially after the pandemic time. The pandemic devastated the country.
Renzo, forgive me for interjecting, if I may. I mean, I do want to come to you, Eduardo, for your take on what we just heard. Maybe if you could contextualize this for us. But before I do, Mariana, we have a video report that you filed for us here at Al Jazeera that I want to share with our audience just to give us a sense more about the context, what's going on. Take a listen.
Hundreds of police forced their way into Peru's oldest university. Student activists had allowed protesters to stay there for Peruvians who traveled to Lima to protest against President Dina Boluarte. More than 200 people were arrested. But when they were taken to the counter-terrorism police headquarters, the anger only deepened.
People are protesting peacefully, but police are pushing everyone back. Apparently, the order is not to allow anyone to protest.
Eduardo, as we heard, this is really about inequality. This is about a deepening divide. When you see that report, when you hear, Eduardo, what we heard from Mariana and Renzo, what's missing for our audience to understand? I mean, what is really contributing to this in this moment? Unfortunately, yeah, go ahead. Now I can hear you. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was saying that in Peru, we have gone through very complex transitions before. 20 years ago, the regime of Alberto Fujimori, a conservative dictator, fell, and there was a combination of demonstrations and institutional changes that brought about the end of that particular regime. Now, after Fujimori fell, there were a truth commission, there were accountability processes, reparations for many victims, but I think that transition had an original sin. And the original sin is that it preserved the constitution that was written for Fujimori a few years back, mm-hmm. and that it kept the economic model that functioned under Fujimori. So we made a transition that was a political transition. We made promises in terms of human rights, but we did not change the constitution. We did not change the economy of the country. So in a way, what you are seeing in Peru is what you saw in Chile about 3 years ago.
Right.
With people that are sick and tired of the fact that they obtain what promises to be a democratic model, but they keep the constitution of the dictator. So that is the situation.
And right.
Just regarding the images that Mariana was presenting us a minute ago, you cannot imagine how traumatic it is for Peruvians to see a university invaded in this way by the police. Universities, education, are one of the few social mobility avenues in Peru. People who think that they cannot probably in their lifetimes obtain economic progress hope that their children will through education, through schools, through universities.
Right.
And so to see the police coming and destroying the gates of a university, accusing the people in the university of being terrorists, etc., it only, I think, deepens historic trauma.
And, you know, I appreciate you kind of explaining to us what that feels like for the people who are watching this as this unfolds on television, on TV, internationally. We have a lot of people picking up on some of the sort of issues you talked about. Castillo, being only the second president born outside of Lima to be elected since 1956. And I want to talk about those deepening divides. But as the protesters now move closer and closer to Lima, it seems like there's more intensity happening there. I want to share with you what one activist on the ground had to say. They sent us this video. This is Mahandra. Take a listen.
The Peruvian government is systematically committing human rights abuses. There are cries that this is no longer a democracy because there is no right to dissent. There is no right to protest against the government. People are being arbitrarily detained simply for being in the general location of a protest, simply for being in their own homes, filming police outside of their homes who are indiscriminately shooting directly at the bodies of protesters who are simply passersby. People have been tear gassed within their own homes simply for yelling from their windows, "Stop shooting at them."
Eduardo, when you hear the way she frames it, I mean, we've seen the images. We know security forces are shooting some protesters in the chest, in the head. And ever since the president called the national state of emergency, it seems like not only have the protests intensified, but so have the crackdown, the attempts by the police and the military, if you will, to restore, you know, security. So what concerns you most, I mean, in terms of where you think this is headed in the immediate few weeks? Is there any way that the president can sort of resolve this, being herself, you know, from an indigenous community, much like Castillo?
One thing that should be completely clear is that under international law, a state of an emergency does not allow a government to kill demonstrators. A state of emergency means that certain guarantees are temporarily suspended, but it doesn't mean that the police can shoot to kill demonstrators and hope to control a demonstration by shooting. In fact, what is happening right now, I pretty much agree with what we heard a minute ago, is, in my opinion, a crime against humanity. Under international criminal law, a crime against humanity is an attack against a civilian population committed in two possible ways. It's either a generalized attack, and we are seeing that, or is a systematic attack. And I think by examining the autopsies and the information that is coming from hospitals, we can see that the police is shooting at the body. So what is happening right now is, for starters, that the members of this government are invoking international responsibilities here, because crimes against humanity are not just the responsibility of the country that commits them, but are the responsibility of the international community. So where is this going? Well, if the government continues to entrench itself in this way and avoid any kind of political solution, we are only going to see a worsening of the human rights situation.
And Mariana, you wanted to jump in.
I wanted to add what Eduardo was saying. What the government is saying is that the majority of people in the country do not want to protest, that they want to work, and that the protests, the roadblocks are contributing to the misfunction of the government. The books for the children that will begin school in 2 months cannot be taken around the country. Medicines, medical equipment can't be distributed, and that has to be done, and that cannot stop. And of course, everything is true. But like Eduardo was saying, that does not give the government a green light to allow the security forces for the excessive use of force. My feeling was a couple of days ago when we were at the anti-terrorist headquarters where all the detainees from the University of San Marcos had been taken, is that it was a small group of activists. They were in a corner, and they were like, I don't know, 80 meters away from the front door, and the police started pushing everyone back into the streets where there was traffic, just because. So the feeling is they don't want anybody to protest.
Right, and that seems to be kind of what is causing all the more outrage. I want to ask you, Renzo, when you when we try to identify the major problems, it seems like there are so many different factors, right, that have been compounded, whether it's the drought, whether it's how hard COVID and the pandemic hit the Peruvian people, whether it's the lack of healthcare or education, or even the fact that now they're not allowing people to protest and the state of emergency is taking away their civil rights. What to you is the most dangerous thing that's happening right now, the thing that is angering the majority of the people?
I think that because this abandonment to the indigenous peoples from like Andes, like Quechua, Aymara people, who are now not only struggling for their rights for basic necessities, but also for their right to be recognized as a political actors, that they have an agency, the political rights, not to construct and be part of this state and its nation's building. And so they become pretty much like a grassroots leader organized from the base that want to be here from Peru's centralized country based in Lima, that historically marginalized them. Mm-hmm. So now they have their agency, you know, to come, you know, to the street, to the plaza, the main square, and mobilize even to Lima, where they can, you know, be heard, because it's the way how maybe the government has to pay attention, you know, to their demands. And so that's something that I see more, you know, more strong in this massive mobilization.
Yeah, and Mariana, I see that. Yeah. Before I hear from you, I just want to allow our audience to hear from one of those people on the ground of that marginalized community. Let's hear it in her words, and then we'll come right back to you, Mariana. Take a listen.
We feel marginalized, despised, treated like misfits and terrorists. It hurts us to be marginalized, and they say that we are different. It's not that. We just want a better life.
We are in the streets because the people reject Boluarte. How is it possible that she asks for a dialogue while killing more than 50 compatriots? That is why the people will never stop fighting until she resigns.
Mariana, a lot of the allegations of a kind of corrupt political class, of not being represented, but also hearing their grievances there outlined, what was it that you wanted to add?
Yeah, I think I wanted to add, I think the fact that things are spiraling in the country is the way the police and the army are reacting to the protests. Violence is not well received in the streets. And of course, there are violent protesters as well. But the violence that the security forces are showing, with especially with using firearms, is simply making people react with more violence. And people say to you on the streets, I don't care if I die, I am going to fight until I die for my children. Allow me one more thing that is very important, is that there are no political costs in these 55 deaths already. We have seen two new interior ministers, but the defense minister, who was Alberto Tarola, who was the defense minister when the first big number of people killed in Ayacucho happened on one day, 10 people killed by firearms when they were trying to overtake the airport and the army opened fire. He was not sacked. He was awarded after that with the position of prime minister. So people see that in the streets and they think that there will be no justice for the people that have died.
And you know, Eduardo was nodding as you were saying that. I mean, so much of this is about a divide, right, between the political, let's say, corrupt ruling class, at least the perception of the people, and then a large swath of the country. And, you know, I want to share with our audience very quickly, if I may, there's this tweet that's going around online, a map of the regions in Peru that were hardest hit by severe drought late last year, as you can see here in the south. And there's a correlation in terms of the road blockades now that are being put in place by the protesters. Now, I can't guarantee that this is, you know, 100% accurate, but it does give the impression that there almost are two Perus. With that in mind, Eduardo, I want to ask you, I mean, this extremely fragile political system that you discussed, and then the reality of the compounding nature of the crises, the fact that there is a crackdown, where will it lead? What is your fear, and how should that help us understand this moment and what might happen?
Well, the first thing to understand, Ahmed, is that map that you show shows indeed a correlation between a drought and the protests. But it could also show a correlation between the impact of the pandemic and protests. And it will show also the correlation of the enormous indifference of the Lima elites regarding the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. If something happens in those areas, some people in Lima simply don't care. And I think that the current government made the immoral and very cynical calculation that if protesters were killed in those areas, nobody in Lima would care. So what we are seeing now when the protests move to Lima is we are going to find out whether people really don't care about the government shooting demonstrators and shooting citizens. So a system that is this broken and a political elite that is this rejected and this delegitimized I think it's very difficult to imagine that they are going to solve the situation.
Yeah.
That is why the protests right now are not asking Mrs. Boluarte to dialogue or negotiate anything. They're asking her to go.
To step down. And, of course, she had made that promise, right, that she would eventually not stay forever. So that's another concern. I do want to hear from her directly, where she was kind of mocking, if I can say, or making allegations that a lot of the protesters are simply being blackmailed. Take a listen.
In communities in the high Andean regions, the sisters and brothers who go out to protest are being blackmailed. They are being coerced. They are told, if you don't go to march, we will ask you for a fee. If you don't go to march, we will cut off your water supply. And if you don't go to march, we will burn your house down.
So, Mariana, that was on January 17. Obviously, there have been claims that, you know, there's just a lot of vandalism, equating the protest movement with vandalism. A lot of misinformation as well online, allegations about the ambassador, a former CIA veteran, meeting with, ministers right before everything unfolded. I mean, I'm not trying to peddle conspiracy theories, but when you hear the president saying that, what comes to mind? Is that helping the situation?
No, it's not. It's showing a lack of understanding, to say the least. I want to tell you, I was in a remote community in the area of Apurimac, which is one of the poorest regions in Peru, and high up in the Andes, where there was absolutely no foreigners, no one who did not belong to that community except us. Mm-hmm. And what I could tell, I want to show you, is that everybody has a phone. Everybody has a phone. Even up in the highlands, the people are looking at social media before they go and work in the fields. Mm-hmm. They are listening to the news, and it is through the social media and what they are hearing that people are deciding that they have to come to protest, come to Lima or come down to the communities or to the cities, because they feel it's their time to make their voices heard. But these theories about Evo Morales, the former president of Bolivia, interfering. I mean, ask the Aymaras in Puno and they would be...
They wouldn't care.
Offended.
Yeah.
They would be offended by the fact that they're being told that somebody's telling them what to do and how to think.
Mariana, you said that the violence is not playing well in the streets in terms of the crackdown, the response by the government. It also doesn't play well in our chat here. We have someone on YouTube, Cleo, saying, I hope the Peruvian government can stop killing people because they are violating the human rights. Peruvian police are not following the usual legal justice protocols. With that in mind, I want to ask you, Renzo, so many calls from the Peruvian people for a new constitution, for a new election, for the president to step down. Almost it feels like to be included in what they feel they've been completely not included. In your minds, these calls for constitutional change, what do you hope and expect will happen next? Are there chances for a more inclusive Peru?
I do think there is more chance to be more inclusive in responding the claim of the vast majority of social sectors. And for decades and centuries, rural, poor, indigenous peasants have been claiming their inclusion into the nation state building by sending commissioners from their isolated communities to Lima. And they search for a good government that can listen to their demands about the oppressions by abusive local authorities. However, most governments, every government, either postpone their demands or reply with repression, as we have been seeing right now. And one thing that I want to add is about this colonial legacy.
Very quickly, we're running out of time. If you can, go ahead.
And racism, are still vivid in Peru today. This needs to change. This has been normalized in practice.
And of course. And that's why we're having this conversation, Renzo. That's why it's an important part of this conversation, one that we're going to continue to follow here. Mariana, Renzo, Eduardo, I want to thank you for being with us. It's all the time we have for today. But you can always find us online at stream.aljazeera.com. Thanks for watching.